Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Just Press Start at justpressstart.net. I am very pleased to have with me today Michael Hartman from Frog Dice. Michael, thank you so much for coming on the program today.
Thanks, Jeff. I really appreciate you having me. It's wonderful.
Oh, absolutely. So why don't you tell us a little bit first about how you got started and tell us about Frog Dice, because the company's been around for quite a long time.
Absolutely. Yeah, Frog Dice is kind of like it's almost a tale of two companies. We were founded in 1996 while I was in law school. And basically, I played MUDs online, text RPGs, and I thought, I think I could do a little bit better. So I made our first MUD, which is Threshold, which is still in operation to this day, still very successful, thousands of active players, which for a text MUD is quite a lot. And then honestly, for the first 14, 15 years or so, that was really it. We just ran Threshold. It was kind of a lifestyle company. I got married, had kids, all this stuff, and we just kind of focused on our one game that was doing great. And then, once our kids got a little older, and also kind of as the market started to move in the areas where things that we were always good at became popular, like free-to-play. To my knowledge, Threshold may be the first free-to-play game ever since we started using that in 1996. So, by around 2010, free-to-play started to kind of be popular.
It didn't have,
people kind of understood how that worked. Social games were becoming popular, games that had a big focus on community. So a lot of our strengths were kind of where the market started going. So between that and our, kids finally being in school full time, we decided to kind of go back into a startup mode. It was kind of weird, at that time, a 15-year-old company, basically becoming a startup. So, we did a little bit of fundraising, which went really well. And then we hired some more team members, and we just started growing. So we had one game for like 15 years. And in May, when we launched Dungeon Elements, we'll be up to, 4 games. So, we've massively increased our output, which has been really cool. And, now our games are graphical and everything, so we're kind of moved into the modern era. So, it's been the last 2 years have been a huge transformation for Frog Dice. We still make, online free-to-play games. That's still our favorite thing. RPGs are still our favorite thing. Mm-hmm. But we're also making some more casual-friendly games, some casual downloadable games that are helping us to, grow our audience and, get our name out there and really benefit from other platforms like Big Fish Games and Wild Tangent and things like that to help us get our name out there. Because, for indies, discoverability is the hardest thing of all. And so when you can partner up with companies like, as I mentioned, Big Fish and Wild Tangent and iWin and people like that, when you can partner with them, it really helps you get your name out there a lot quicker.
So obviously, it's always difficult for any indie to become noticed, quote unquote. But tell me about how you went from MUDs to something like Tower of Elements, where you took everything from that Primordiax world and kind of distilled it down into a match 3 game, but still with RPG elements. Was that a difficult transition for you, or was that something you'd planned for a long time? Or
it wasn't difficult at all. First of all, Threshold has tons of mini games, so it's always been kind of like a part of our internal design culture that While we love the big core RPG type games, we've always liked the little things too. My wife, who's actually the vice president and creative director of the company, and she's the lead designer on our games, she's a huge Match 3 fan, loves Match 3 games. So for her to design a Match 3 game, that was completely natural. she loves Bejeweled. She plays, and that's just the beginning. If it's a Match 3 game, she'll try it. So she thought, what if we took a Match 3 game and combined it with some of the cool stuff that we like, some RPG elements, some tower defense elements, and so that's kind of how Tower of Elements was born. And we really like the idea of keeping all of our games in the same game world so that as people play more of our games, they learn more of the lore, and there's always a sense of familiarity. Every time they play a new game, they're like, oh, okay, cool, I'm still in this comfortable, the Primordiax world. Mm-hmm. I'm still in that world, but now I'm learning new things about it or a different part of the world, stuff like that. So it was a very natural transition for us because of our, early focus on mini games and the fact that our, lead designer loves Match 3 games.
Right. Now, in terms of Tower of Elements itself, there are times where in the middle of that, things can get overwhelming really quickly. Not overwhelming, but the pace can really ramp up. So tell me about trying to come up with a pace that was as frantic as it can be without completely overwhelming the gamer, thinking, oh my god, I just can't possibly keep up and things are happening too quickly for me to be able to fight these monsters that are Plants vs. Zombieing their way across the screen at me.
Right. I'm really glad you said that, because that's the other big – and like whenever I describe Tower of Elements, I always say, you know, it's Bejeweled plus Plants vs. Zombies plus Awesome Sauce, because that's like – that's kind of our inspiration.
Right.
Those two games were two big inspirations. So really the way we designed the pacing was that if you're really good at match three, you can beat the game on easy without doing anything but match three. Mm-hmm. Now, yet you're right. There are some higher levels where you're going to have to start matching like crazy.
Right.
But, you know, match three pros, that's no problem. They shrug that off. But that's where the tower defense elements come in. Like when it starts to get frantic, that's the time. That's why you have spells. Like, that's where the RPG elements and the tower defense elements come in. Because the spells can be very powerful, and they recharge based on how many matches you make. So some of them might be 20, 50, 100 matches. The tier 4 ones are 100 matches. So as you're making matches, you're also charging up your spells. And the spells can do things like push the monsters back or heal your tower or just, you know, huge fireballs and stuff like that. So the spells really help. And then, of course, that's where the tower defense elements come in, like putting up barriers and attack dummies and little things like that. So, yeah, that's definitely part of the pacing, is that as it gets harder, you have to start leaning on those other elements, the RPG and the tower defense elements. And that also helps kind of ease people in, because it means when you first start playing, all you have to do is make matches. Then it steadily keeps getting a little bit harder and a little bit harder. And then when it starts to get frantic, you're like, okay, I guess now I need to actually pay attention to these other facets of the game. Although, all that said, I will say one of the biggest things we learned making that game is that we should have had what a lot of people in the casual game space call a relaxed mode, mm-hmm. where there's not that kind of pressure. And so in future games like Dungeon of Elements, we definitely have kept that in mind, so that there is a way to play in a much more relaxed manner. You may not have as high a drop rate on things like scrolls or things like that. But we've definitely wanted to keep that in mind because, you know, our games appeal to an extremely wide range of player. Like, for example, Coin and Carry, which is our online free-to-play game where you're a medieval shopkeeper. We know of players between ages 5 and 85 years old. So, I mean, there could be even more on outliers, but so that's a pretty wide range. It's about 75% women players, but then we have some guys that are hardcore, you know, gamers that love it too. So when you have that kind of wide base, you do have to be mindful of – you have to figure out ways to give people enough options so that the game can remain challenging for them but not too challenging. And that is harder when you have a really broad base of appeal. But it's also kind of cool because it's nice that you can appeal to different people like that.
Oh, absolutely. And I like the idea that – I mean, there's different schools of thought on design, because there are some designers who just say, my game is difficult. You need to hone your skills if you want to excel. And then there's the ones that say, hey, as long as you're enjoying whatever it is you enjoy about the game, we'll customize the difficulty to you. So obviously you guys come down on the ladder there, but it's definitely appreciated, because there are so many people who don't have the Twitch skills. I mean, who are not even good at something like Bejeweled, who would be able to get more out of it.
Absolutely. And you know, that's you're so right. That is a really good description of kind of two schools of thought. And I don't take anything away from the guys and gals that like to make the super hard game.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's cool. And sometimes I like those games too. But for us, I personally prefer, both as a gamer and as a designer, that the kind of self-scaling game, you know, games that can scale internally. That's my preference, because normally we're shooting for an overall experience, and we want them to experience it all. You know, we want our goal, our ultimate goal would be for every person who plays our game to experience the whole thing, you know, experience the whole story. The story is also a big part of all of our games also. And so if someone can't finish the game, then they can't finish the story, and that's frustrating.
And it can prevent them from wanting to try other ones in the series too. They might feel locked out of the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a really good point too. I mean, that's a huge design goal, is to have all of our games intertwining. And if they were locked out, then that wouldn't really accomplish that goal. Yeah, that's a good observation.
So tell me a little bit, just again with Tower, how you came up with the idea of the different levels of the tower attack in that particular space. It's kind of hard to describe if you don't watch the game. Obviously, you know what I mean. Cause, you know.
Right, right. So, yeah, I know what you mean. So, like, for someone who's listening, you know, imagine your traditional match three board, and each row, imagine that corresponding to, like, you know, physical space, mm-hmm. what we call them lanes.
Right.
A lane where bad guys are coming along. Yeah, that was actually a funny thing. That's probably one of the hardest things in the programming of the game was dealing with that, because you have 2D space and 3D space kind of meeting, and
right.
it's kind of tricky because then you have things like, you know, missiles going behind some monsters and stuff like that. So making that so it's pretty seamless, that was actually one of the larger programming challenges. But yeah, it was basically just what we wanted to do was we wanted it to be where caring about where you match, we mm-hmm. wanted that to matter. You know, there are match three games that have extra things added, like you make matches and then something else happens, like say you have red, green, and blue crystals, and whenever
right.
you fill a red bar, you can do something. But in those games, and those are cool games, you don't really have to care where your matches are. You're just matching all over the board.
Mm-hmm.
So we really wanted – one of the things we wanted to be different was, you know, what if you actually cared where you were making matches? You know, so we're like, well, let's say the missiles shoot out right from the lane, and so you have to kind of aim. And I think it's – what's kind of neat about it, by doing it that way, you know, our Big Fish rep says that she thinks we've created a new genre. She calls it the match three shooter.
Yeah, okay.
So, and we're already working on Tower of Elements 2, which will also have an online version. So, yeah, so we intend to, like, keep pushing the quote, match three shooter genre a little bit. And, you know, we'll know if we're onto something if we start getting cloned. So.
Oh, absolutely.
So we'll see.
Now, you mentioned it a little bit ago, and there have already been some articles about it. So let's talk about the transition from the MUDs to Tower of Elements into the upcoming Dungeon of Elements.
Okay. How did we do that, or why did we do that?
That will give people an idea of what to expect from the new game, and then, yes, the transition along the way.
Okay, sure. First I'll go ahead and explain Dungeon of Elements. It is a pretty significant, like I said before, Tower of Elements, I think I said this, it was our game that we used to learn Unity, the Unity engine and toolset, mm-hmm. which we're totally all in on now. All of our games going forward are in Unity. So Tower of Elements was our game to learn that. And we were like, well, we could spend a couple months and have everyone on the team just learn this, or we could just make a game and learn that way. So we made a game. So that was a lot more fun. So Dungeon of Elements, you know, our team's much more experienced with Unity. Like, we've had more time. Tower of Elements was done in about 3 months. Dungeon of Elements is probably going to be about 6 months of development, so about double the development time. You know, we've hired some more people too, so more development time, more team. The art is significantly upgraded, which is really cool, and just an enormous amount of content. There's like 45 different unique dungeons. Tons of monsters, a bunch of gear. It's really a cool. It's one of our things we like to do is mix core and casual mechanics and try to bring those kind of people together. Dungeon of Elements is a great example of that because there's some serious RPG elements, like you create a character and you have gear and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the combat is like Dr. Mario. If anyone's familiar with that game.
Okay, yeah.
So, you're an alchemist and you make these capsules and you throw them down like the dungeon room and they explode and you blow up the monsters and stuff like that. So, but you're still using your gear. Like, you can use your weapons. You can click on your weapons and use those to directly attack monsters. Your offhand item, like a shield, you can use to slow things down a little bit. So the gear is actually a part of the game. But again, kind of like Tower of Elements, if you're really good at the, you know, the Dr. Mario type combat, then you could probably ignore the RPG elements and the crafting. But on the really hard boards, you'll kind of start to need them a little bit more. So same kind of concept there where we ease you into it. And, you know, you can choose how much of the core elements you want to use based on how good you are at the casual elements.
Right.
So that's kind of how we do things. So that game really, and it actually has a branching story. So it's another, we've kicked it up a notch story-wise as well. So, Now, we're not talking like full-on Mass Effect level,
Right.
you know. But then again, at the same token, I promise not to disappoint you with the ending like Mass Effect 3. So,
Ooh.
sorry. I have some friends at BioWare, and that's one of my favorite games of all time, but I'm still starting over the ending, so I have to
Oh,
throw that.
believe me, I know what you mean. I definitely know what you mean there.
So, yeah, so, okay, and then to answer the other question you had is kind of how we got there. Well, we are planning to get one of our next, like, another game away down our whole schedule is we want to get back into online RPGs. We have a web-based RPG called Raffle, Realms of Fat Loot. You can tell from the name, it's not a hyper-serious game. We call it an
Right.
RPG done ironically. In fact, in that game, in the lore of that game, the ultimate bad guy is Frog Dice. So
Oh.
we've put ourselves in the game and we're the bad guy.
The evil overlords, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess maybe I shouldn't get into it too much, but I will anyway. Yeah, in that game, there is an evil gaming company that, in order to basically, cut corners, they figured, instead of having to program all this stuff, we'll just open a portal into another world and suck adventurers into it from that. And so you're the player, and you're controlling one of these adventurers that's been sucked in from the quote real world of Primordiax. And it's your goal to like your job is to guide that hero and not only defeat the enemies in the game world in the void, so your hero can go back to the real Primordiax. But ultimately, you're kind of trying to defeat the evil Frog Dice also. So. Yeah, so we've kind of put ourselves in there as the bad guy, but so that game is going to be really cool. It's we have we have to say we've started on it kind of. We've been doing some concept
Right.
art design, but we're hoping to start on it seriously in the next couple of months. But so we do plan to get back to kind of our really core online RPG type thing. But in the meantime, we've been making these casual games to try to get our name out there to more people. So more people can learn about our games and more people can learn about us. And the casual downloadable space is just a great way to do that. I mean, there's platforms, again, Big Fish, Wild Tangent, these people, there's millions of people on these platforms. And when you get your game there, and the nice thing is they're curated, well, we hope to get on Steam as well, especially with dungeon developments. These platforms are curated, unlike, say, the iTunes store. So, there's not, 1,000 games a day. There's sometimes
Right.
only one game a day. So when you get on these platforms, you get a little bit more time in the sun, where people can actually see your game and download your game. So that's pretty cool. I think with Tower of Elements, it was like within the first 6 weeks, over 100,000 people had downloaded the game. And, it was probably 4 or 5 years before 100,000 people had ever tried Threshold. So that's a really cool opportunity for us to get our game in front of all these people. Now, obviously, a lot of these casual people, they're never going to play Raffle, and that's fine. But there are a lot of them who will, or at least they might tell, if it's a mom that plays Tower of Elements, she might tell her son who plays, World of Warcraft, hey, this company I like, they've got this new game.
Right.
So we have a lot of, and as we go forward, especially with all of our online games, they all share one virtual currency called medallions. So if you had a family account, your wife could play Tower of Elements online when that's available because maybe she loves Match 3.
Right.
The husband could play Raffle because he loves RPGs. Your kids could play Coin and Carry because they love all the little mini games, or your grandmother could play, and they could all share one account. Share, medallions between each other. You could win prizes and win medallions and share them, all kinds of stuff like that. So we design our games to really interact very well, and then that way, your whole family could play different games from Frog Dice and benefit from it and have fun almost as a team, almost as a party, but in multiple games.
So tell me about the challenge of trying to coordinate all of that and keep a consistent vision of an overall world, but broken up into these the different games, the different storylines. I mean, how do you guys keep track?
Well, I think that's the benefit there. That's probably one of our biggest strengths is that we've always been really good at A, world design. That's the only reason Threshold's been successful as long as it has been. And especially on the design side, that it's small. It's my wife and I. So on the design side, it's compact and it's two people who share like a similar vision, but not identical. And I think that's important too. If we had an identical vision, then we wouldn't really be adding very much to each other. It's like I'd say our vision is about 90% the same, but then that 10% where we're different is cool because it adds like little extra twists. But that is a challenge. We have to stay very organized. There are a lot of things that we do. We use Google Docs.
yes.
So that when we make sure that we do a lot of design and organization in advance, we have a whole system of how we write about the story first. And then we have little sections that for every game we make where we call it like the 30-second explanation, you know, almost like the elevator pitch.
Right.
So that we can briefly explain what a game is. Because I always feel like if you can't explain what a game is in about 15, 20 seconds, then, you know, something's not right. It should definitely have more layers. You know, you shouldn't be able to explain everything about the game.
Right.
But if you can't give someone the generalist, you know, you might need to figure out a way to distill that down a little bit. So we try to, you know, really be organized, do a lot of design in advance, and make sure we get it all down, written in a way that is collaborative so that other people have access to it. And so the rest of the team can see. So the rest of the team can see, okay, you know, I may be working at this aspect of this game, but at least if I read through the documentation, I can see how it fits into the greater whole. And then we try to do other things too. We try to meet up regularly as a team and make sure that everyone knows that, you know, what's going on. So it is an organizational challenge, but it's definitely, you know, I think if you stay on top of it, it's something you can handle.
So let's switch gears just the idea of being an indie for a moment. So in these turbulent times, does it make you more nervous every time you want to pitch something, or do you just say, well, we're in such a golden age of indies that we're just going to take our swing and see what happens? And I again, just from that standpoint of trying to get yourself known when even the bigger companies, you know, something like a LucasArts just collapsed.
Right.
How do you guys, you know, what's your day-to-day thinking in terms of that?
Yeah, I actually find that, I guess maybe it sounds, I don't want to sound morbid, and I definitely don't want to be sensitive to those people, because almost every time a studio shuts down, there's at least one or two people I know who are affected. So, but I actually take those as an encouraging sign, because it shows that things are shifting in the industry. And I think it's at a good time, because game budgets are starting to get completely out of control.
Yeah.
When you hear, you know, big companies say selling 5 million units is a failure.
Right.
Okay, that's – I mean, the AAA games now are like double the cost of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Getting $200 million budgets are starting to become – I mean, that's Avatar, you know,
yeah.
And that's becoming the common budget. That's crazy. I'm definitely not happy to see these companies and studios folding. No, not by any means.
Oh, of course.
But I do see that it shows that the direction the industry and the markets are moving is a little more in the direction of the indies rather than some kind of just massive consolidation into like three huge companies like automobiles or something like that.
Right.
So I'm encouraged as far as the validation of our business model, even though I'm discouraged as far as what a bummer it is. And I also see it as a future opportunity because, you know, we've seen how the model works. The big companies, they're very risk averse, and you can understand why, because there's massive amounts of money at stake and they've got shareholders they got to keep happy. So they tend to be very risk averse, and that's why they focus on sequels and things like that. But then they look to the indie world as ways to bring in proven ideas. So if you're an indie right now, you know, you can see the fact that, you know, they're shutting down all these studios. Well, there's going to come a time in a year or two after they've recovered from that where they're going to go back into acquisition mode. They're going to say, okay, we've consolidated. We've, you know, say an EA or something has bought 15 indies, and, you know, after a few years, things percolated and some of them worked and some of them didn't. And the ones that didn't, they shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're going to lick their wounds. And in another, you know, they'll put out another Call of Duty or whatever and make $1 billion. And then they'll be like, okay, let's shopping again. And it'll kind of repeat itself. And I actually think that's a relatively healthy model. You know, the indies who want to stay indie, they can. They don't have to let themselves get bought. You know, they could go the Epic Games route.
Right.
On their own forever, and that's pretty awesome. But the ones who do aspire to that, hey, I want to make a couple of cool games, and then I'd like for a big guy to bring me in and see what happens. That's good. And some of those will work and some of them won't. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know, either. Some of those, you know, small companies will get bought by EA, Disney, Activision, you know, Take-Two, whatever. And some of them will do great and some of them won't. And then the cycle will repeat itself. And I actually think that's a pretty healthy model. I actually hope that continues because it seems to reward success. It seems to give people a lot of options. And it seems to give gamers a lot of different stuff. You know, they get, because as much as people bag on the big companies for all their sequels and stuff, there's a reason why people buy those games because they love those franchises. You know,
Exactly.
they want those sequels to come out. You know, they want, I mean, I'll say this, I was pretty bummed about how Diablo 3 turned out, but I still want Diablo 4. You know, I'm not that disenchanted yet. They need to disappoint me one more time. You know, before I'm done. So, and you know, The Sims or SimCity, sorry, same kind of thing. You know, there's some things about this, but I guarantee you, 4 or 5 years from now, if another SimCity comes out, you know, people are going to be excited.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
So, and I'm not saying that in the cynical way, like you some people saying like, oh, they'll eat whatever crap we put in front of them. No,
No, no,
like
no.
businesses have built up so much goodwill. And people are so excited about them, they're going to give them a couple chances. And that's good. So I'm glad that they have that. But then on the other side, as long as so they have all these sequels, people are getting to see these things that are the things they love. But then now they've got this healthy indie side that's making totally new crazy stuff. You know, games that are so different from the AAA games. So gamers, you know, they're getting some variety also, and I think that's really, really healthy. So, you know, I think in that way, I don't like to emulate the movie industry too much. I think, you know, there's a lot of things they do that are terrible, like the fact that teams get dissolved as soon as the movie's done, then bam,
Right.
scatters to the winds. Although we're starting to see that a little bit in the game industry, and I hate that. I definitely think there's value to keeping the team together from game to game, but the one thing that is cool in the movie industry is their healthy indie scene. The fact that, you know, there are $10 million movies that can come out that are amazing, or you know, $1 million movies that can come out. And I think that we're seeing that happen in the video game industry, and it's great for the people working in the industry because it gives you so many different options for what kind of job you want to have, and it's great for the gamers because they're getting totally different types of games, lots of variety. So I think I really am excited about how our industry is moving forward, even though we have this kind of uncomfortable hiccup right now.
So, along with that, how do you feel about the way console indies are being handled? Because I mean, obviously, you guys have stuck to PC development. Is that a choice? Is that just you haven't had the opportunity yet to go into consoles? Is it a market that you're interested in? Or so, just talk a little bit about that and how you think, you know, PC. I don't want to turn it into PC versus console, but just tell me a little bit about being a PC developer during this era too.
Well, you definitely don't have to worry about that. I am such a, I don't know, maybe it's because like now I'm 40 years old or something. I'm so much more open-minded. You know, I'm 10 years, maybe I would have been willing to bash on consoles or something, but now I just see them all as different ways for people to enjoy your games. So I like them all. I like all platforms. But yeah, being an indie on the console is, from my perspective, that seems like a much rougher road. You know, you can't just decide your game is going to be available. There's always some kind of channel you have to go through. You know, I have a colleague here in Lexington, Super Soul Games. They make a game called Compromise. It's a twin stick shooter. It's a really cool game. They release it on Xbox Live Indie Games. Is that right? XBLIG. And you know, and that they liked it. They're, you know, it was a good experience in a lot of ways. But there are a lot of things they would tell me that were rough. You know, like having limited amount of free copies they can give out to press and things like that. And I was like, wow, really? I would hate to have all these restrictions. And then, you know, there's all the problems with the Xbox dashboard, the fact that you get pummeled with ads. And it's
I don't know
hard.
what you're talking about.
Yeah. And it's hard for people to find you.
Right.
So now, what's cool though is, you know, it looks like Sony is getting really excited about making indies a big part of the Vita and the PlayStation 4. So in fact, we spoke to someone at PAX. We were at PAX East, and someone from Sony came by our booth and played our games and really liked them, and expressed, you know, some serious interest in having our games on the PS4 and the PlayStation 4. I mean, the Vita.
Right.
So that's going to be That's gonna be something different for us, because we've always stayed away because it's we like the open platform of the PC, the fact that we can do whatever we want. I think it's much easier for indies on that. But like I said, I don't dislike any platform, so I would love to experiment and see about getting some of our games on some other on the console. But at the same time, I am wary because they have an enormous amount of control over everything you're doing. And that can be iffy, but we're gonna
Right.
see. I hope things go well with our talks with Sony. If any of those people out are listening, along. I hope things go well because I think it would be really cool for people on a console to play some of our games. But we definitely maintain our primary focus on the PC because it's such an open platform, and mobile also. We're about to start getting our games on tablets. I'm very bullish on tablets. I'm not so bullish on phones as a platform.
Okay.
Mobile is huge and everything, and everyone's freaking out. Oh my God, mobile is so amazing! But I'm gonna pull this stat from memory, so hopefully I don't mess it up. But if I'm not mistaken, last year in 2012, 35% of all new games were about like in the whole industry, all new games were for the iOS, for the iOS platform, but only accounted for 5% of total game revenue. So, that's kind of like, let's be excited about it, but if they're only generating that much revenue, let's not get too excited.
Right. Well, it's hard too when you're only able to charge up to a couple dollars if that, per title too, considering some of the work that went into some of them.
Absolutely. Yeah. That race for the bottom that happened so quickly, was terrible. Shame that that happened right out of the gate, that the price war just dropped it to 99 cents because, I mean, come on, those games are worth so much more than
Oh,
that.
yeah.
But unfortunately, that's it, So that's the bar, and so you're stuck. And as much as I love free to play, like I think every single game having in-app purchase is a little excessive. I love free to play, but I don't think free to play works for every type of game.
Right.
People out there making games like, oh, we'll make it free to play and have all this, and I'm like, wow, that's really a shame. I feel like your game would be 1,000 times better if you literally just charged me $20 up front and we were done. Some games I think work better that way, but and I think the phone, I mean, let's be honest, it's a tiny screen. If you don't have a hardware keyboard, especially, your fingers are covering up, a third of,
Exactly.
it gets hot really fast. It
Especially when
drains.
you're trying to do those the virtual controls, the virtual twin stick controls on a game too.
It's almost impossible, and
Yeah.
at a battery power, it's not a great platform for games. It's not a useless platform. There are definitely some, fun little puzzle games and quote time wasters that are nice when you're standing in line somewhere or waiting room. But compare that to say a tablet, which I actually think is a truly robust experience. Like when I play a game on a tablet, I don't actually feel like I made a huge sacrifice. And I think ultimately gamers, like, they're not going to be satisfied with a platform that requires them to make some kind of sacrifice to play on the platform.
Right.
So like when you play on a PC, you don't make any sacrifice. You have big screen, wonderful controls, powerful computer, everything. Console, same thing. You're not making a sacrifice. You've got a wonderful experience. You don't feel like, wow, this is fun, but what if it was bigger? Well, it's huge. It's as big as your TV.
Right.
It's the same way. Like, I don't feel, they're big enough that when you're holding in your hands, you're kind of like, I really wouldn't want it much bigger. Because, I mean, imagine, take your 25-inch monitor. You want to hold that in your lap? No. I mean, so tablets are like actually a really good form factor. You hold that and you're like, yeah, that's as much size as I want. And you get a good experience, especially some of the tablet games now that are getting designed with the tablet in mind. So they aren't doing too much of the virtual controls. It's
Right.
really, actually designed for that interface, which is cool. Like I just played a game a friend of mine made called Tap Rocket. It's a runner, that's a big genre. But the control's really easy. It's literally just tapping the screen to make your little rainbow jetpack go. Now it's on the tablet, so it's 99 cents, which I think is rough because it's definitely worth more than that.
Right.
But Tap Rocket is a cool game, and it's really fun, and it's really easy control, so works really well on that platform. So I think it's cool that that's happening. So anyway, I as you can tell, I'm prone to kind of getting philosophical, or
That's fine.
But I think it's I've been doing it for so long. You know, I think I sold my first game in like 1991, so I've been doing it so long. I'm enamored with observing the trends and seeing how things are going.
Well, kind of, sort of, along those same lines, the way I found out first about Tower of Elements was the promotion that you were running during the holidays. So why don't we talk a little bit about that, how you got involved with that, with the charitable pricing, as it were.
Cool. Yeah, there's a really awesome company based here in Lexington also as well called Sojo Studios. They are their whole purpose of their company really is to bring I don't want to speak for them, so to keep that, you know, take this with a grain of salt when I say this is their whole purpose. Their purpose seems to be integrating charitable giving with gaming. They made a Facebook game that was really cool. Called Weetopia, and it was, you know, you built things like it was, you know, kind of like a city building game. But as you build things, that directly correlated to charitable projects that they would do. Like, so you build a school in your game, and a certain amount of money, a percentage of the funds the game makes now goes to building a school in Haiti or something like that. Really awesome. But in addition to making games, one of their really big goals is this what they call the Cause platform. Way for other game developers to tie into their platform through an API, and you know, and create things where a player can buy X item in your game, and that'll trigger Y charitable giving in the real world. Really awesome. So we were one of their first developer partners, and we did something really simple to start off, just the sale of Tower of Elements. And from December through March, every time someone bought a copy of Tower of Elements, we would donate money to a charity called Stop Hunger Now to feed children and families around the world. So it was a pretty cool, it was pretty fun. It was really fun for us. It was kind of our first experiment. But we're going to keep doing things like that. When Dungeon of Elements launches, we hope that at launch we'll have something set up with another charity through Sojo that they'll set up for us to do another promotion like that. It's really fun to have that kind of connection, you know, and there are people out there that are all jaded and they're like, oh, you're only doing this for publicity. And, you know, first of all, obviously there's a publicity element, but there's a
Right. That
element
doesn't make it wrong either. You know,
there's a publicity element for the charity too. You know, like
right.
let's Stop Hunger Now. One of the reasons they were excited to partner with us because they don't reach gamers normally. Even know about their charity. So it's not even all about the money for them either. You know, they're happy to have the money because that's important for a charity, but they're also happy for more people to know about them and to know about their cause. So, you know, yes, there's a mutual promotional element, but then there's also people getting helped. And I mean, of course we're a company, so we're trying to make a profit. It's cool
How
when
novel, right?
Along the way you're doing this neat thing also that's helping people out.
Exactly.
Makes it a little more fun. It makes you feel like, you know, this is, and it makes everyone on our team really excited. You know, the people on our team that are like, hey, this is awesome. I made this cool game, and you know, not only do I have a job, but we're helping this charity. So, it's a really awesome thing. We love the people over at Sojo. The founder of the company, Lincoln Brown, is, it's cool how excited he is about gaming. You know, there's been a few times where I sent out a message like, you know, hey, this is going really well, something about the promotion, and he'll call me at like 11:30 at night, all excited. So it's really neat how excited they are about, you know, what they're doing. And I imagine it's because, hey, how exciting must it be to go to work every day and know that, like, you know, the core of your business is helping people.
Oh, exactly. And again, I think that the major benefit of it was it was a game I hadn't heard of because unfortunately I wasn't as aware of you guys as I should have been. But I said, well, man, the game sounds cool, so I'd like to try it anyway. And I'm doing charitable work, sort of. Yeah, absolutely. Sign me up. So I think there's no downside to something like that.
Absolutely not. And I think that's why, you know, some, you know, bigger gaming sites were willing to even write about us at all was because at least we had this, you know, other aspect. You know, because like you said, I mean, there's so much going on. It's impossible for anybody to know about every game coming out, and or even every indie studio. So when you can do things to kind of cut through the noise,
Yeah.
that's definitely a huge help. So we're very thankful that Sojo was excited to work with us. I'm really looking forward to working with them more in the future. And I hope that that's something that people do find about Frog Dice is that, hey, it's neat that they're doing these cool things. And it really fits the ethos of our company also. We had done some charitable things like long before. We were involved with a domestic violence charity here in Lexington for a long time. Because we'd had a number of situations where people playing Threshold, through playing Threshold, had been able to like escape some domestic violence type situations. It's one of the cool things about our community. Like one of the stories we like to tell, a longtime player, I think she was a cleric actually, not that that's relevant, but I'm just thinking of her right now. She had been playing Threshold for a long time, but her husband wouldn't let her like talk to people on the phone or like leave the house. But he didn't understand that when she was playing Threshold, that was actually talking to other people.
Right.
So over the
Wow.
years, to know people, she would things would come out where she would say, "Oh, I can't do that," or whatever, and people would be like, "Well, why not?" And then they would start talking to her out of character, and they would say, "Well, that's not right. That's not the way you should be treated." And eventually, they helped her understand that it wasn't. But then, as is often the case in domestic violence situations, she had nowhere to go. So players on Threshold were like, "Yeah, you do. You can come stay at my house."
Wow.
So people on Threshold, that's so when she left, she was able to go and stay with other people on Threshold. And then even the people she didn't stay with, tons of other people donated, like, 'cause she had to leave, like, with the clothes on her backs. So, and she had, I think, I'm trying to remember now, I think she had three kids. So other people, including ourselves, donated toys and books and kids' clothing and stuff like that. And then that next year, she came to. We have an annual convention every year for our fans. It's kind of just a party. She came to FrogaCon, and a bunch of people had sent stuff to us, and then we gave it to her when she was there.
Oh,
So
wow.
we have an extremely supportive community. So that's always been kind of like in the ethos of our company in general. That even though obviously we have to make a profit to stay in business, we definitely like the fact that as game developers, there's other ways that we can impact the world in a positive way. In fact, I mean, even getting back to why I started the company in general, like I said, I started it when I was in law school, and honestly, I hated being a lawyer. And I was like, well, I'm a lawyer and I can make people miserable, or I can make video games and make people happy. And it was a much more gratifying for me to make people happy. Now, that's not a diss on lawyers. There are lots of awesome lawyers out there, but I think that real core feeling of wanting to like bring happiness to the world, bring joy to the world, without getting too emo here, has always been a huge part of our company. So this charity connection is just a natural continuation of that.
Well, I mean, it's absolutely amazing. That's an incredible story too about the woman from Threshold. So, wow, you've got me speechless pretty much.
Well, she still plays too. So yeah, she's a it's a really awesome story. And there have been other things that are similar to that, like that's one of the more the most extreme examples, but there's lots of stuff like that. Our community, it's really awesome the way they pull together to help people out. And I'm just glad that somehow we've encouraged that and attracted those kind of people.
Well, in a week like this too, it's really nice to hear stories of people coming together and helping one another. And I mean, yeah, that's just got to make you feel so good on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many times where our community is a haven. I mean, again, thinking it back to all the things that we've been through. I mean, founded in 1986, it means, we've been through 9/11, we've been through many things, and I think that's one of the reasons people love our community and our game so much. Once they play, like once you get them, that's it. You're done. Once you're a Frog Dice gamer, that's it. Usually, once we get our hooks in someone, they stay, and I think the community is the reason. Yeah, games are cool. I definitely think our games are cool, but I think our community is what's really the true secret sauce. I call it like the Cheers effect. Like you have these friends, you have these people, and you share both character game experiences and you share out of character experiences going through, it's like we've just had recently in Boston and everything. Texas, or more extreme tragedies, had tons of people in the military.
Mm-hmm.
We've done, like, well, that's something we especially we don't do it as much anymore because we don't have as many people over there. But for a couple of years, my wife would regularly put together care packages, and people would send us stuff to put in there, and we would send care packages out to you know, some of our players that were in the military, you know, just like magazines and
right.
all this stuff to send. But you know, that's just another example of how our community's always been just really, really tight. Even at, no matter how big we grow, that seems to stay. So yeah, we've been through a lot of tough things and you know, experiences, and we've kind of pulled together as a group to comfort each other. So, you know, it is definitely an example of the positive power that games can have, which I think is amazing.
So along those lines, if somebody just heard this and says, I need to be part of this community, why don't you tell people where they can find the games and yeah, just where they can find the various titles.
Absolutely. So the easiest thing is just literally go to our website, frogdice.com. So once you're there, you can find everything else. You know, as far as, you know, then being a part of the community, obviously playing Tower of Elements by itself is not really going to do much since it's a single player casual downloadable game.
Right.
If you join our forums, you know, you're right there hanging out with everybody. Our forum, you know, I mean, no, people don't really use forums that much nowadays, but people still do. But, you know, we're also, you know, we have very active Facebook fan pages where people are chatting about our games all the time. You know, that's just facebook.com/frogdiceinc. I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/frogdiceinc. But as far as becoming a part of the community, I definitely think the number one way is, you know, go to our website and either start playing our games and talking about them on the forums, or jump into like Threshold or Coin and Carry or online games where you can really be interacting with people. But yeah, everything starts from our forums. We've got pretty convenient links to all of our games. The online games are all free to play, so they're really easy to get into. And I feel like we do free to play well. You know, there's not really aggressive paywalls and things mm-hmm. like that. You know, you can experience the games in a very full way without paying anything. We have kind of a motto in our company where we say players are content. And what we mean by that is that even a player who never pays a single dollar, they are still potentially content for somebody else. And I mean that in a positive way, not in like a, some kind of nefarious way.
Right.
Even if someone doesn't pay any money, you know, what if he role plays with someone else and interacts and amuses them or entertains them or mm-hmm. person just enjoys the relationship they have, well, that other person might pay. And in that regard, the company still benefits, and that other person still added something positive to the community. So we don't stress too much about figuring out a way to make everybody pay. Now, the irony of that attitude is our monetization rate is ridiculously high compared to the industry. Across our free-to-play games, it's 77%.
Wow.
You know, average is 1%. So people are like, are you serious? It's 77 times industry? Yeah. But I think it's because I think it's kind of the funny, you know, I liken it to Princess Leia in Star Wars. You know, the tighter you close your grip, the more star systems will slip through your fingers. It's like the tighter you try to squeeze those dollars out of people, the more people won't. So
Exactly.
So I think by us, we just focus on the long-term experience. Another one of our company sayings is, if you make a game fun enough that people play long enough, eventually they'll buy something. And I think that's true. You know,
yeah.
If they play enough, eventually they're going to be like, you know what? I've been playing this game for 2 years. What is my problem that I haven't bought anything? I think eventually they'll be like, all right, fine. You know, they'll buy something, which is great. Because then it's like, that's a strong choice. When people have decided to spend money in your game, that's a really powerful choice. And I
right.
think that kind of helps solidify their link. So I think a lot of times the first time someone buys something, I'm more excited about it for that reason than the money, because it means, okay, cool. Now this person has chosen. I've not pressured them. I've not bullied them. They've chosen to buy something. So that means they really love the game, and they're probably going to be a part of our community for a long time. So, yeah, so that's kind of our philosophy. And I think that's the free-to-play philosophy that works, and that ultimately, so far, all of our numbers have shown that. So we're definitely going to stick to that. So that's kind of that's how we do things.
Well, it's incredible. The company is Frog Dice. The current game is Tower of Elements. Michael Hartman, I would love to have you back on the show when we get closer to the release of Dungeon of Elements. So we would be honored to have you back on if you would be so kind.
Oh, I look forward to it.
Well, it sounds great. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on today. We're kind of running up against a time thing here, so I really apologize. I'm having a great conversation with you. But again, I do look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Great. Thanks a lot, Jeff. I really enjoyed the chat, too.
Thanks.